Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for episode 22, Racing to Justice. Tonight, we're on the case in Speedway, Indiana, home of the Indianapolis 500. It was here that a member of the city's close-knit car racing community mysteriously vanished from her apartment. The evidence discovered in the wake of Cindy Albrecht's disappearance had those closest to her fearing the worst and left detectives trying to find her following the slimmest of clues. October 27th, 1992. It was early Tuesday morning when Sandy Fink and Becky Miller anxiously drove to their friend Cindy Albrecht's apartment. They were worried. The 31-year-old had not returned their calls since Sunday night. Cindy's friend, Sandy Fink.
I was the last person to talk to her. It was 9:30 at night. We talked about getting together the next day to do our expense reports.
Cindy was the head chef for the catering department at Team Penske, a legendary auto racing group whose drivers have won the Indy 500 more than a dozen times. Sandy and Becky worked with her. All three had just gotten home from the season's last race.
Everything was fine. She said she was just laying on the couch watching TV, waiting for her boyfriend, Pete, to call.
But Pete never got in touch with Cindy.
Pete called me Monday morning, and he was worried. He said he hadn't talked to her. She hadn't answered the phone when he called. He said he called several times.
At first, Sandy wasn't concerned.
I said, "She's fine. I talked to her last night. Maybe she fell asleep when she was waiting for you to call."
But when Pete called her again later that night, she began to worry.
He still had not talked to her. And I was like, okay, this is kind of weird.
Cindy's two best friends spent the next 24 hours frantically trying to reach her. By Tuesday morning, they were panicked. Cindy's friend, Becky Miller.
And Sandy called and said, "You know, Pete's been calling me. He still can't reach her." So Sandy said, "I think we really need to just go over there and see what's up with her."
When Sandy and Becky first arrived at Cindy's apartment complex, they were relieved to see her truck parked outside.
When we went over and we saw her truck sitting there, we're like, "Oh, she's home."
And it was like, "Oh, she's in big trouble because she's here and she hasn't called us back. So why is she not answering our phone calls?"
Still, Sandy and Becky were uneasy as they approached the apartment.
We banged on the door. No answer.
Nobody answered, and so then we went around to the back.
Cindy's friends decided to check the sliding glass door.
As soon as we got around the back, we saw the screen door was completely off the track and set to the side. And it was, well, that doesn't look right.
Sandy then noticed the sliding door was unlocked.
It slid open. So we went back down to our car and got some mace.
Nervously, they made their way back towards Cindy's home.
This feeling overcomes you. Something is really wrong.
Despite their fear, the two friends went inside.
We were afraid she was in there and either hurt or possibly dead. We knew we had to go in there and check.
The apartment was eerily quiet.
Her purse was there, and her keys were there, and her watch, and her cats.
But there was no sign of Cindy, and nothing in the apartment seemed to have been disturbed.
Really, there was nothing, you know, no tables overturned or anything.
In fact, it appeared that Cindy had just walked in from the airport.
The suitcases were still packed, and normally she unpacks right away. It looked like she had just dropped her clothes to get in the shower.
Cindy's bathroom was the last room left to be checked.
I just told Sandy, I said, I can't go in there.
Pulling back that shower curtain was absolutely one of the most horrific things I've ever had to do.
But the tub was empty. There was no one there. Cindy had simply vanished. Her friends were now in a panic. They knew that Cindy would never have left town without telling one of them.
We knew everything about each other. She didn't do things like just off the cuff. She was really organized and she was really had her life in order.
Cindy's friends were convinced that she had been the victim of foul play.
We felt from that minute that somebody had taken Cindy.
We didn't know what was going on, but you just felt it. It was a huge dread. I don't know how to explain it. It was like our lives are never going to be the same.
The two friends immediately called Speedway Police to file a missing persons report. Detective Bill Jones.
They called the police department on the morning of October the 27th to report a missing person. They had gone to her apartment at the request of Cindy's boyfriend.
Detective Bill Jones arrived at the scene moments later.
The apartment was undramatic. There really didn't look like anything that had happened inside the apartment. Cindy was a neat freak. If you'd seen her apartment, it was meticulously clean. Everything was in its place. Everything was orderly.
But then, Cindy's friends pointed out something disturbing. Her brand new comforter was gone.
Becky actually realized it, and she said, that comforter's not on the bed. And then we just started bawling.
Detectives wondered if anything else was missing. A search of Cindy's briefcase led to another startling discovery.
She carries the Penske cash, and so they had us look, and it wasn't there.
An estimated $2,500 was missing. Investigators were puzzled.
There's $40 in her purse that's still there. An expensive watch is laying on the table. It's clearly not a burglary. My thinking is it's somebody who knows that that money is in that bag.
Cindy's friends agreed.
Somebody random hadn't broken to rob her.
After a thorough investigation, detectives didn't believe that Cindy had just run off on her own. Both the police and her best friends feared that she had been abducted. Nothing else made any sense. The 31-year-old chef had a career in the racing industry that was on the rise and was well-liked by everyone who knew her.
She was just an amazing, amazing person. Very talented, and her smile. She lit up a room.
And Cindy's friends told investigators she had a lot to smile about.
She was the happiest she ever was in her life. Job of her dreams, traveling. She was just ecstatically happy.
She was a vivacious person. She was an attractive person. She was on the way up. She was liked by everybody.
As word spread about her disappearance, the city's large racing community banded together to help in the investigation.
Our whole Penske hospitality team was there. We had other people from other teams, and we'd go out and search. We were doing anything we could think of. We were on a wing and a prayer.
The media was doing its part as well. Cindy's story was front page news across the city.
Reporter Stacia Matthews. Every station was on this case. Every station was following this story. Speedway is a very tight-knit and close community, and it just shocked people that she vanished without a trace. This case was shrouded in mystery. There were so many unanswered questions. Why would she disappear? And who would want to hurt her?
Police were doing everything they could to answer those questions. They studied the area outside her apartment for clues.
So to my immediate left is the back entrance of Cindy's apartment. It would have been very easy for somebody to come and go from this wooded area without being seen.
Investigators scoured the tree line, but didn't find any evidence related to Cindy's disappearance. Detectives then focused their attention on the men in Cindy's life.
Who else does she know? Who else does she associate with? Is she seeing anybody else? That's the line of thinking that you go through.
Police talked with Cindy's friends to find out what was going on in her personal life in the weeks prior to her disappearance.
Well, she was getting divorced, and she had a new boyfriend that she started dating in August.
Cindy's most recent relationship had been with a coworker named Pete. It had just started to get serious.
They were just that new relationship and love, both of them crazy about each other. He loved her and she loved him.
There was even talk of moving in together down in Florida.
They were in love and she was planning on moving to Florida and they were going to be together.
In fact, Cindy's boyfriend, Pete, had seen her earlier in the day on Sunday, the last time anyone had reported seeing her.
They had last seen each other at the airport. Pete was flying to Naples, and Cindy was flying back to Indianapolis.
Cindy and Pete had made plans to talk on the phone once Pete returned home Sunday night. Based on the messages Pete left on Cindy's answering machine, it was clear that conversation never happened. Pete was quickly dismissed as a possible suspect.
Based on the phone records, we could tell that the time that the phone calls were being made, that he was physically in Florida.
Detectives then shifted their attention to Cindy's estranged husband, Michael. The couple had met through the racing industry.
She had married Mike Albrecht and separated from him and moved out 3 or 4 months prior to all this happening. The separation was amicable. Mike had actually helped her move into the apartment.
When investigators spoke with Michael, they learned that he was back in a relationship with his ex-wife in Milwaukee.
So, for all intents and purposes, they had gone their own separate ways.
In fact, Michael said he had been staying at his ex-wife's home on the night Cindy disappeared.
We were able to verify that he was, in fact, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he was visiting his ex-wife. He also stopped and saw his parents and a person by the name of Bill Filter.
With the most obvious names checked off their list, investigators weren't sure where to look next.
You're kind of in a quandary. Are there other suspects that we've missed? Who has a motive to do harm to Cindy? Is somebody angry? Does somebody owe money? You know, there's a million reasons.
But with no new leads, the investigation stalled, and hopes of finding Cindy alive were fading fast. But best friends Sandy Fink and Becky Miller were not about to give up. The two friends had been so desperate for answers, they even hired their own private investigator.
At the time, police could only really consider her a missing person. And we knew in our heart that it was going to be so much more than that.
Then, a friend called Sandy about something she had heard on the news that went beyond anyone's darkest fears of what had happened to Cindy.
She said, "Hey, the radio just had a report about finding a white female headless body."
Hunters had made the shocking discovery in a wooded area near the highway, more than 100 miles away from Speedway. Becky followed up with the Newton County Sheriff to see if the victim was Cindy.
I said, "I have a friend that's missing," and I started to describe her. Tall and thin, long legs, scar on her stomach, scar on her knee, and I actually heard the sheriff catch his breath, just kind of that. I knew then.
Minutes later, Speedway police received the call asking for Detective Bill Jones to come to the crime scene.
We got a phone call from the state police that indicated that they had recovered a body that generally matched the description of our victim, Cindy.
The seasoned detective was not prepared for what he saw when he got there.
A white female lying on her back, nude, and was missing a head. It's clearly not something that you see all the time. You're shocked by the gruesomeness of the crime.
There was great devastation when the hunters found this headless body dumped on the side of the highway in a shallow grave. And people wondered, is it her?
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment.
So who doesn't like a deal? Unfortunately, some traditional big wireless carriers don't seem to. So if you're tired of spending hundreds on crazy high wireless bills, bogus fees, and free perks that cost you more in the long run, try a premium wireless plan from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. Stop overpaying for wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Everyone I know who uses Mint Mobile is amazed that they can get the same service or better at a fraction of the price. So if you like to keep your money in your pocket, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/OTCpod. That's mintmobile.com/OTCpod. Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month 5-gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
In an attempt to confirm Cindy's identity, police checked her fingerprints against their records. Detective Bill Jones.
Cindy had never been arrested, so she didn't have any known fingerprints available.
Instead, detectives lifted a fingerprint from an ashtray in her apartment. The victim was Cindy Albrecht. It was a devastating moment for her friends.
Cindy's friend, Becky Miller.
You never expect to hear that somebody's been decapitated and left in the woods. We couldn't believe it.
Cindy's friend, Sandy Fink.
Your whole world comes crashing down. Even though you've thought all along that she's not coming back, that little tiny piece of hope is now gone.
For Bill Jones, the Cindy Albrecht case was now a murder investigation, one with very little evidence to go on.
Detective Bill Jones.
There was lots of rain during that three-week period, so a lot of the physical evidence that would have been at the scene was probably washed away.
Adding to the detective's frustration, the medical examiner wasn't able to conclusively determine the cause of Cindy's death.
The autopsy lists post-traumatic separation of the head and neck from the body. The neck was gone. And you can't tell if she was shot, stabbed, strangled.
At first, police assumed the crime had been sexually motivated. But the evidence indicated otherwise. The medical examiner could find nothing to suggest that a sexual assault had taken place.
They've taken her from the apartment. They've driven her 110 miles north. They've posed the body. They've cut her head off. The normal thinking would probably be that there would be a sexual assault. It didn't really add up at that point.
But the sadistic nature of the crime led detectives to believe that the killer had a personal connection to Cindy.
You start to theorize, why would somebody do that? Why did the killer cut her head off? To me, that's somebody who's really mad.
Investigators circle back to Cindy's friends to see if there was a suspect they may have missed.
And out of those interviews, another name came up as to somebody that she had at least dated at one time.
The man's name was Matt Kernell, and his line of work instantly raised red flags.
He was a tree trimmer. He was kind of a party guy, liked to drink.
As a tree trimmer, Kernell might have had access to the tools needed to commit the brutal crime. And when detectives questioned him, he did little to quell their suspicions.
He did admit that they did have a date. They went to a movie. They went to dinner. They went back to her apartment. According to him, they kissed.
Cindy had told her friends that after just one date, the man began acting strangely.
She said that he had stopped by unexpectedly, and that kind of concerned her, the fact that somebody's just now showing up at her apartment.
Detectives believe the pieces of the puzzle were quickly falling into place.
Number one, he admitted that he had been at the apartment, so he knew where she lived. That they had been physical, and that when pressed, were you ever in her bedroom? The answer was, I could have been. So yeah, he's absolutely a suspect.
Kernell's alibi for the night Cindy went missing only added to those concerns.
He'd been out drinking with some friends and had been in a fight.
Investigators asked him to take a polygraph exam. And the results raised even more red flags.
He showed signs of deception and that more testing was needed.
Investigators believed Matt Kernell's alibi for the night Cindy had been killed would crumble once they looked into it. But they were wrong.
He'd been the victim of a pretty serious battery to the point where he had to go to the hospital. His eye was swollen shut and didn't get released until the very early morning.
Not only did hospital records prove he was there at the time police believed Cindy was killed, the medical examiner didn't feel that the tree trimmer's tools were consistent with the wounds found on the body.
One of the things that we knew from the autopsy is that some type of very fine tooth instrument was used to separate the head from the body. He used saws with big teeth.
Kernell's airtight alibi was backed up by several witnesses.
Once the tree trimmer was eliminated, police were back to square one. They turned to outside agencies for help.
We're a small department that doesn't have tons of resources, so we enlisted the FBI's help.
The FBI assigned a criminal profiler named Dan Kraft. He noted that Cindy was an unlikely target for such a gruesome crime.
Agent Dan Kraft.
When we look at victimology, Cindy wasn't the type of individual that was going to create controversy or enemies or upset people. She was outgoing. She was well-liked. She was not a high-risk victim. She was what I considered a no-risk victim, living in a no-crime neighborhood.
Kraft believed that the man who murdered Cindy must have known critical details about her life.
My opinion was that taking the head was to delay the identification, but they didn't take the hands. And the reason I believe they didn't take the hands is she's never been fingerprinted. So only somebody close to her is going to know that.
Based on the way her body was found, Kraft concluded that the killer had been determined to humiliate Cindy.
The body was left in what I considered a sexually posed position. That tells me that somebody wanted to degrade her, that somebody has a significant relationship with the person, nearest and dearest.
Based on Agent Kraft's profile, investigators revisited Cindy's estranged husband, Michael Albrecht.
One of the things that we did, because Michael was no longer in town, was go to Fort Lauderdale and interview him at length and really lock in his alibi statement.
But Michael remained adamant that he had nothing to do with Cindy's murder, and his story about being in Milwaukee remained consistent with his original account.
His alibi really never changed.
In fact, police didn't find any evidence that Michael Albrecht had been involved in his estranged wife's murder. But then, an unexpected call from his former boss, Antonio Ferrari, changed everything.
He told us that Mike had approached him several times during the IndyCar season, wanting to know if Antonio had somebody in the mafia.
In a recorded statement, Ferrari told the authorities exactly what Albrecht had asked.
He said, maybe you know somebody in the mafia, or you know somebody that can do something for me. Must be something permanent.
Albrecht had said he could pay up to $50,000 to the person who carried out his plan. Investigators were stunned.
It was certainly information that, as a detective, you go, wow, that's pretty significant.
Ferrari told police he had initially dismissed Albrecht's remarks as bitterness over an impending divorce. But then, Cindy's murder became front page news.
He just thought that he was venting about the deteriorating relationship between him and Cindy. Then he's like, whoa, this is really important that I let the police know this.
Police believe that Albrecht's statements had been incriminating, and financial records appeared to back up Ferrari's story.
We confirmed the fact that there was a $50,000 insurance policy payable to Michael in the event of Cindy's death.
It was the exact amount Albrecht had offered to pay for a hit on Cindy. Detectives then asked Antonio Ferrari to take part in a sting operation. Hoping to obtain more proof against Michael Albrecht, Ferrari willingly agreed.
One of the things that we tried was to get Antonio and Mike to have a recorded conversation. We gave Antonio a recording device to put on his phone.
Investigators hope that Michael Albrecht would tell his former boss, Antonio Ferrari, exactly how he had killed Cindy during a taped phone call.
I would have loved to have Mike confess it, oh yeah, exactly, and I killed her, but that didn't happen.
While Albrecht never directly confessed to killing Cindy, he did admit to asking Ferrari to find someone to, quote, take care of her.
The most indicting thing to me was the confirmation about Mike wanting to do something to Cindy. Mike was looking for somebody to do something dramatic. She had money that they could take in the course of this. That, to me, was the compelling part of that conversation.
Police now had solid evidence that Michael Albrecht had wanted Cindy dead. But Detective Jones still had no way to place his prime suspect at the crime scene after Cindy hung up the phone at 9:30 on the night she disappeared.
That is the critical time for us.
Michael Albrecht's ex-wife told investigators he had been staying with her in Milwaukee that week. And on the night Cindy went missing, he arrived home around 2 a.m. Albrecht would have needed about 5 hours to get to Milwaukee from Cindy's apartment in Speedway, Indiana. Investigators knew there was only one person who could account for Michael's whereabouts during those crucial hours: Bill Filter. Bill Filter, a longtime friend of Michael Albrecht, had provided him an alibi for that window of time. He claimed that on the night of the murder, the two of them had hung out together in Milwaukee from roughly 8 p.m. until nearly 2 in the morning.
Bill Filter told police that him and Mike had gone out drinking. They had gone to Bill Filter's father's bar. They had bought a six-pack of beer.
Detectives were frustrated. They believed that Filter's story was a lie.
We later found out from interviewing the bartender that worked on that night that state laws prohibit selling beer. She didn't sell any beer, and she would remember if he came into the bar to try and buy beer.
They knew that Bill Filter's lie could only mean one of two things.
Either Bill Filter and Michael Albrecht were involved in killing Cindy, or Michael Albrecht was involved in killing Cindy and Bill Filter was providing a false alibi.
And once investigators got to know Bill Filter, they realized why it was likely he would cover for his friend.
He looked up to Mike. They had been friends for a long time. I think in Bill Filter's eye, Michael Albrecht was pretty cool because he was an IndyCar chief mechanic, and he put Mike on a pedestal.
Then investigators got the break they had been waiting for. They located the car that Michael Albrecht had been driving that night.
We did find some very significant evidence in the car. On the floor mat of the driver's side was a head hair.
The strand of blonde hair appeared to be stained by blood.
From mitochondrial DNA testing, it was consistent with Cindy's blood.
Detectives believe they now had enough evidence to arrest Michael Albrecht.
We went to the prosecutor and explained to him, here's our case.
They were stunned by the response.
They declined to file a charge.
Detective Bill Jones tried to push the case forward for years, but none of the local prosecutors in Marion County, Indiana, was willing to risk going to trial.
Keep in mind, prosecutors typically want to file cases that they know they're going to win. And this clearly was a circumstantial case. I can't file charges on my own. I have to depend on my prosecutor in my county to file those charges.
Time after time, he was forced to give Cindy's friends, Sandy and Becky, the same disappointing answers.
Cindy's friend, Becky Miller.
By the fifth year, you think, okay, we still have to do everything we can, but there comes a point when it's, what else can I do? And maybe they won't ever get enough.
But the two friends remain determined to get justice for Cindy.
Cindy's friend, Sandy Fink.
We knew we had to be there for Cindy, and she had no one to speak for her.
At the time, they were just a pain in my ass, if I could say that. They were always wanting to know, what's the latest? What have you done? Those are the kind of girls that if you want to have a good friend, it's them.
In his heart, Detective Jones was just as disappointed as Sandy and Becky. And then his tireless efforts finally paid off when he showed the case file to prosecutor Larry Sells.
I saw the gruesome photographs of Cindy. I just became so outraged. I felt like there was more than sufficient evidence. The person responsible needed to be charged and tried and let a jury decide.
More on The Case, the podcast, after this.
I'm criminal psychologist Dr. Michelle Ward, and on season 9 of Mind of a Monster, we're bringing you the case of serial killer Michael Gargiulo.
He either charms them because he needs them to do something, or he stalks them because he's going to kill them.
The repairman with Hollywood good looks who stalked and attacked his female neighbors in their own homes.
The jury was shown the photos from her apartment, and it was just covered in blood.
Listen to Mind of a Monster, The Hollywood Ripper, wherever you get your podcasts.
Five years after Cindy first disappeared, Michael Albrecht was arrested. Sandy and Becky vividly remember getting the news.
Cindy's friend, Sandy Fink.
I about fell out of my chair. I called Becky. We both just kind of screamed.
Finally, we knew in our hearts it was him.
And prosecutor Larry Sells wasn't done. He also asked for an arrest warrant on Bill Filter. When asked why, he had a simple response.
So he wouldn't testify for Albrecht at the trial. If I could shut Filter up, then Albrecht was going to have to testify.
Sells hoped that the threat of jail time would force Filter to admit he had been providing Michael Albrecht with a false alibi. And his plan worked.
I got a call from that attorney, and he says, is there anything we can do with this case? And I said, I don't know. It depends on what Mr. Filter's got to say.
Filter's attorney had a quick answer.
He said, I think you're going to like what he's got to say.
Bill Filter confessed to lying to police for years.
Bill Filter.
Why I lied, I can't give an answer except for the fact that I had a lot of respect for him and didn't think he could have done it.
Filter told investigators he had nothing to do with Cindy's murder and that he had never met up with Michael Albrecht on the night of Cindy's murder. But he claimed that in the days leading up to the crime, Albrecht had taken him to Cindy's apartment to lay out a plan to kill her.
He explained to me, you know, you can come around the building and kind of pointed out where her place was. He pointed out her patio door and how you can climb up there.
You go through that gate, you park a car there, you put her body in the trunk, you drive away, you're good.
Police couldn't comprehend why Filter would believe Albrecht, even after he laid out the best way to get into her apartment.
Even though he showed me all that, and our times he's bragged about stuff before or whatever, and never, you know, nothing ever happened.
Looking back, Filter says at the time of Cindy's murder, he was dealing with his own personal demons.
At that time, I was not the person I am today. I used to do a lot of drinking, and I did drugs. So I wasn't totally in a clear mind. I wasn't thinking.
Filter said that drugs and alcohol clouded his judgment. But he claims that he never thought that Michael was serious about his plan to kill Cindy.
Like I said, I didn't think he'd do it.
But police never believed Bill Filter's story.
You'd think that he realized that the guy meant it. You'd think he'd realize that maybe this guy's serious. So go to the authorities. If you care a whit about this beautiful young lady, why wouldn't you go tell the legal authorities?
Investigators were convinced they knew the reason.
He didn't care. He did not care. He was enjoying his life with Michael, getting to go to some of these big races. Here, this big-time race mechanic who's working on Indy race cars is spending time with him. He just didn't want to lose it.
When Michael Albrecht's trial began, Detective Bill Jones laid out how the crime had taken place.
I think he knew when she was going to get home. He surprised her. And I think he strangled her on the bed, wrapped her up in the bedspread, and set up this alibi that kept us from arresting him for such a long time.
Police believe that Albrecht had decapitated Cindy in an effort to conceal her identity. And they had a theory as to why he savagely killed his estranged wife.
In my mind, Mike's thinking is, if I can't have her, nobody's going to have her. And I think he was rageful and just hated the fact she was so successful.
His life was going down the toilet, and hers was skyrocketing. Everything that she ever wanted in life was occurring.
Sells told the jury how Michael Albrecht had tried to get someone else to kill Cindy, but in the end, he acted alone.
He planned to kill her. And eventually, not being able to find anybody else to do it, he did it himself. And I don't think he lost a night's sleep afterwards.
After an emotional two-week trial, Michael Albrecht was found guilty of murder. Cindy's friend, Sandy Fink.
We were all holding hands, and her hands were sweating profusely, and just, we were a wreck. They finally got the verdict read, and he was guilty, and it was just a huge relief. I don't even know how to describe it.
Cindy's friend, Becky Miller.
Elated. Just, it was over. It's done. He's going to jail. It was just all those years of, they got to get him, got to get him convicted. Now we've got to get him in jail. And it was finally there. So it was quite emotional.
For Bill Jones, the guilty verdict was a gratifying end to a long chapter in his career.
Big part of my life for 6 years. I thought about her every day. I did know her well, even though I never met her.
Larry Sells was proud of the outcome, one that brought peace to Cindy's friends and to the detectives who never gave up on the case.
I wanted vindication for the work that the law enforcement officers had done on this case. I wanted to do it for them.
But the veteran prosecutor wasn't done fighting for the truth. At Albrecht's sentencing, he asked the question everyone still wanted answered.
I looked him right in the eyes and I said, "Where's Cindy's head?" And he sat there, and I didn't get a response for a while. The attorneys objected. The judge sustained the objections. I waited, and he eventually said, you're asking the wrong man, sir.
In fact, Michael Albrecht continued to proclaim his innocence.
He has a psychopathic personality. He doesn't feel like he did anything wrong.
Bill Filter wound up getting immunity from prosecution. And although his record was wiped clean, his conscience was not. Filter says he still struggles with his role in Cindy's tragic death.
If I would have came out right away and said something, it'd been different. I understand why people don't forgive me. All I can do is try being a better person now.
Many people wonder what might have been if Bill Filter had shared what he knew in the days leading up to the murder. In fact, investigators are certain that he would have saved Cindy's life.
If he had alerted the authorities, and Michael Albrecht had become aware of the fact that the authorities knew about these threats, I don't think he would have ever gone through with it. And she would have never been in a position where he could have carried it out. There's no question in my mind. And Filter's got to carry that to his grave.
Now that Michael Albrecht is behind bars, Cindy's two best friends can keep their focus where it belongs, on honoring her memory and keeping Cindy alive in their hearts forever.
That last year, she had told me, I've never been so happy. And there was nothing but up for her. And I still have pictures of her in my house. She'll always be alive to us.
On October 25th every year, which happens to be my birthday and the day he murdered her, Becky and I have got together now 23 years straight, and we have a drink, and we toast to Cindy. She's just there with us all the time.
Following his conviction, Michael Albrecht filed an appeal to have his 60-year sentence reduced on the grounds it was inappropriate and unconstitutional. But a three-judge panel denied that request, citing the heinous nature of the murder. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.